Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by Kyle Devitt, and on this All-Star Week, we are going to change up the format a little bit. We're going to go to the old tried and true. Kyle, we kind of did this a little bit earlier when we did the redraft after the pre-draft, when we had four people on the horn, but since the MLL is hearkening back to the 2011 style of having schoolyard choices being made of teams by a couple of young, lucky young men, in advance of the game, we are going to pick our own teams right now.
Yeah, and we're going to do a little fantasy style. Obviously, there's two of us, so there's no need for any sort of complicated format. We're going to keep stats during the game. We'll have resident stat dog Eric Rue, now of Goldie Beacom. Keep the stats. We'll do, you know.
Does he know he's doing that, by the way?
No, he'll be fine, though.
No, I figured. I'm just making sure.
Yeah, he's good. 1 point for a goal, 1 point for assist. Do you want to do half point for ground ball?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Something like that.
Yeah, well, should we do one point for a goal, or should we do 2 points for a goal to value it more than an assist? How do you feel about that? Particularly in an All-Star game when assisted goals are so relatively rare.
Well, I've been coaching all week, and I've been screaming that goals are as good as assists, so I can't really, in good conscience, do that.
All right, I'm fine.
But if you want to do that, that's fine.
No, I'll roll with 1-1.
1-1. Let's do save half point. And face-off win half point.
Sounds good to me.
Cool.
So basically we're just picking defensive last.
Yeah, and GB's half point, you know.
Should GB's be a full point?
Easy stuff. No. No.
Okay.
No. I'm going to go with no. So yeah, let's roll.
And we're doing whoever gets the first pick, then the next person gets second and third, then fourth and fifth.
Yeah.
Snake draft
just
style.
Every other. Yeah. Well, we can do every other. I don't think it matters. You want to draft
that's
by
the
position?
Exact opposite. That's the exact opposite of what I just said.
Yeah, I realize that. do you want to go by position and then it's easier?
Well, I mean, are we trying to emulate the way the kids are going to do it?
Yeah, why not?
Well, are they picking by position?
No.
So then let's not do that.
Fine.
So,
we really should have gone over this before we
started. No, I'm sure that people are really interested in us hashing out the rules as they listen to this podcast.
Riveted.
All right, well let's do snake draft style. So you get two picks in a row after the first pick. All right.
All right.
And we'll go by alphabetical order of name, and both K and D are ahead of T and F. So you get the first pick.
Oh, wow! How momentous. With my first pick in the fantasy draft, who do I want? You know who I'm feeling in this game? Big game, big stage. I'm gonna go with P. Poyon.
Interesting.
First pick.
Interesting selection. How confident are you that that's going to be the first pick of the youngins?
Zero confidence.
I'm really interested in is whether or not one or the other will pick a goalie first. I think that would be fantastic.
It depends on if they're goalies in real life, I'm sure.
Yes. All right, let's see. I'm going to follow suit with the MIDI idea. And I am going to... I'm gonna value familiarity, teammates, and I'm going to pick Kevin Crowley and Joe Walters.
Oh man, why you want to do stinks now. Okay,
you like that, don't you?
Well, I like that you twisted the rules so you could do that. I understand. I would do that too. Let's see, it takes a lot of guys off the board that are big goal scorers. I will go with in a similar vein, Jeremy Sieverts and Drew Snyder.
That was essentially the alternative that I was considering.
Yeah, there's really not much to go on there.
All right, well, then I'm going to pick a MIDI that probably won't score a ton of goals, But if I were putting a team together, I would want him on my team to win. So basically, I'm just going against the rules of the game a little bit. And I'm going to pick Matt Abbott and hope that he has a big night.
Okay. All right. Let's take him off the board. I think, do I get one or two? Just one?
No, you get two.
I get two?
We continue to get two until we're done. The last person will only have one pick.
You picked Abbott, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I get another one. I'm sorry.
You get another one.
All right, so I'm going to go with Chris Bocklet.
Damn it. All right. A little run on attack, man. I see that. I will go with the big bomber, Matt Strebel, with my other pick. And I will start a run on attackman, and I'm feeling the youth. I'm going to go with Rob Pinnell, RP3.
It's a good pick. He seems like a All-Star Game type player to me. I'm going to stay in that vein, and I'm going to pick Ryan Young, because I can imagine him just putting his head down and going to the goal a fair amount, which usually works itself out pretty well.
Murdering
in All-Star games.
You're murdering me right now.
And then I'm going to go with pretty much the guy that has the most experience, that I have the most confidence putting up points in this game, and I'm going to go with Ned Crotty.
I'm going to lose. All right, let's see. Need some goals. Let me try and win this. I'm going to go with Zach Greer and Steven Brooks.
I like the Greer pick. I don't think he should have gone that late. I think that potentially I made a mistake by not taking him a couple spots earlier.
Fair enough.
And I'm going to respond by taking Kevin Buchanan. And I'm gonna push the envelope a little bit. I'm going to go for a guy who I expect to put up big save numbers and potentially some offense. I'm going to go with Brett Queener.
Wow. You know you don't get points for winning those halftime things, right?
Ooh, maybe we should.
Well, now you want that. I already lost. You just murdered me in this whole thing. All right, need goals, need points. You know what? I'm gonna go Young. I'm gonna go Palasek and Cunningham. Because I think Palasek has something to prove. And Cunningham is criminally underrated.
All right. I'm going to go with a couple guys who, you know, maybe are looking for the big stage to make a name for themselves. I'm going to go Jordan McIntosh and Mike Stone.
All right. Then I will take – assists are the same, huh? I'm going to go with – Ben Rubior and Steel Stanwyck to clean out the attack.
Jumped out ahead of me there a little bit.
Yep.
Well, luckily there's still an attackman left on the board, so I'll take Mike Sawyer, and then I'm going to get the face-off ball rolling by going with Greg Renling, because I like the way he's matched up with Anthony Kelly in times in the past, recent past.
All right. Fair enough. So I guess in turn, I'll have to take Kelly as my Fogo, just so I don't give you too many points. And goalie-wise, I'm going to go with Jesse Schwartzman.
You realize – well, I guess not. Never mind. That doesn't matter. That doesn't make sense. I was going to say that one of us could potentially have gotten in big trouble goalie-wise by, you know, only taking – never mind. They're each going to play half, so it's fine. I was thinking that, like, playing time advantage could have worked out one way or the other in a significant way. All right, well, then I'm going to go I'll go with the last offensive player still on the board, John Rannigan, and I will go with Kip Turner in goal.
All righty. All right, so I guess I got to take Adams and for – my bonus, I'm going to go with Brody Merrill.
That sounds great. I'm going to go with the next two guys who I expect to put up offensive numbers, Kyle Hartzell and Kyle Sweeney.
Sweeney, huh? All right. All right. Well, in that vein, then I guess I kind of have to take Karolunas because he'll at least take LSM shifts. So that's one. And at the two spot, let's take Ryan Flanagan playing in front of the hometown crowd.
I like that pick. He'll pick up a couple ground balls.
Yeah.
I am going to take Barney Ehrman and Mike Manley.
Good. I mean, what? Then I will.
By the way, did you see some of the shots that Mike Manley took on Sunday?
Yeah, I did. I believe I texted you while I was watching the game.
I think you did.
I think I did. I will take Schmidt and Zink, and you will have Evans to close it out.
It's amazing how and by invaluable, I mean not valuable, like lockdown great defensemen are in these types of games.
Yeah, it's not a defensive showcase.
Which is crazy when you consider that it's not the defensemen that are dropping out of this for any reason. You know what I mean? They're the ones that have the least incentive or motivation to show up and play, and yet they're the ones that are happiest to be there, it would appear.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think it's more, you know, defensemen don't always get recognized. And when they do get recognized, it's kind of it's more of an honor for them because they don't get it the rest of the time, you know, and that's going to be something to strive for and something to motivate you.
And that makes sense. And I think that there's some value in that. But, all right, so are we going to go ahead and recap these things?
Yeah, let's recap. You want to read yours?
Sure. So, starting with my attackmen, I have Ryan Young, Ned Crotty, Chris Bocklet, and then a couple of tweeners in Kevin Buchanan and Mike Sawyer that can run both. You want to do your attack?
My attack is Rob Pennell, Tommy Palisak, Kevin Cunningham, Ben Rubior, and Steele Stanwyck.
My midfield is Kevin Crowley, Joe Walters, probably Jordan McIntosh or Mike Stone filling out that third spot. And then rounding out the unit, we've got Rannigan, Abbott, and then, like I said, Sawyer and Buchanan.
I have Pete Poyon, Drew Snyder, Jeremy Sieverts, Matt Strebel, Zach Greer, and Stephen Brooks.
So when you look back, when you look back on that, are you still as confident that I'm going to win as you were when you were talking trash?
I mean, I was talking trash against myself. It's always better to lower expectations. I think there's a lot of two-point potential there, and I think two-pointers should be worth two, by the way. I think that's kind of a given. We didn't really talk about that.
No, I'm cool with that, particularly because I've got Kyle Hartzell on my team.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. You don't get points for the ball going over the crossbar, you know.
So, yeah, there goes Mike Manley's value as well.
Just letting you know. But yeah, I mean, I have all the 2-point threats for the most part, except for Hartzell. Poyon, Snyder, Sieverts, Strebel, Brooks even, you know, occasionally. So, I feel confident. It's just, you know, you definitely have more breakout star, like guys that are in form in just your first two picks and Crowley and Walters. I don't regret the Poyon pick though. I predict big things, but if he lets me down, I'll let him know.
My face-off guy is Greg Granley, and yours is Anthony Kelly.
I think Kelly has a better chance to score a goal, and that's kind of
– that's probably, you know, true.
The only way. And they battle.
Well, keep in mind that he's got to score one goal for every two face-off wins fewer he picks up.
Yeah, that's fair. And he might get two, so that break, you know, that's like four face-off wins. So it might even out. I think that's kind of a head-smashing – you know, like heads smashing together, bear versus shark kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. Is it on land or on water?
It's on a cliff.
Over water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. My Defense is Kyle Hartzell, Kyle Sweeney, Barney Herman, Mike Manley, and Michael Evans.
A lot of defenders. Not a lot of points there, but a lot of defenders. My defense is Bernie Merrill, Brian Kirilunis, Ryan Flanagan, Brett Schmidt, and Lee Zink.
I think those are a wash. I don't think one of us has a significant edge in terms of the point.
I got Merrill.
Yeah, which he could go for 1-1, and then Hartzell and Sweeney could go for, you know, could combine for 2-2.
Well, I mean, Sweeney plays deep now.
I understand, but that doesn't mean that he's not going to. It's an All-Star game. He's going to end up with the ball and a stick behind the goal, and he's going to try to feed somebody cutting to the hoop.
Or dive to the net.
Yeah, there you go. See? It's been a while since you've seen that.
Fair enough. I went with Maryland Carolinas for GBs and Flanagan, too. So hopefully that pans out. I think defense is always a wash, but I think if the other stuff pans out as far as, like, goal scoring and, you know, the other numbers for attack and midfield, it could be the difference. So we'll see.
And then in goal for me, I've got Brett Queener and Kip Turner.
Solid picks. Brett Queener is definitely going to run the ball up in an All-Star game. That's a given. I have Schwartzman and Adams. I'm just counting on saves there. You know, I'm just counting on saves kind of. Both those guys can go off. You know, I think Turner, you know, Queener can go off too as far as save-wise. He's had a really good year. But I really think Schwartzman and Adams have the, you know, breakout 10 save and a half performance in them. So give me those 5 points, fellas. Let's go. You know?
Well, Kyle, we're looking ahead to the All-Star game. Any other thoughts on how excited you are for this one?
I would be more excited if I was there. I hate bringing that up. I know you guys hate that. But I'm glad to go to championship weekend instead. I had to make a choice. I made a call. Sorry, Charlotte. I'm sure I'll be down there at some point in my life. But it just won't be this weekend. The All-Star game is an awesome event. If you've never seen it, or if you're just getting into MLL and you haven't seen the All-Star game, you know, last year's kind of audio gaffe aside, it really is the best thing that the MLL puts out as far as entertainment value alone. You know, there's not a lot of, you know, mean competitive spirit going on there. It's just straight fun and lots of great goals. Guys always going for highlights, guys practicing new celebrations. It's the best and worst of lacrosse. In that way, you know, I think there's this whole movement towards, you know, everybody should stop doing all these celebrations and wearing flashy gear and all this. It's like, all right, fine, but it's an All-Star game. That's when you can do that and it's fun. And the halftime stuff, you know, it's hit or miss. I think some of the stuff is great. Queener's winner last year where he kicked his goalie stick and the ball just kind of trickled in was not as great as if it went top shelf or even just past the goalie in the air. But, you know, ball goes in, ball don't lie. So I enjoy the trick shot competition, especially. Last year I was there in Florida. I almost got run over by Adam Gittleman while I was filming it and doing commentary for videos on IL. But it's great. It's a great thing to watch, a great experience for fans, both at the game and at home.
And now as we kind of turn our attention to the second half, you did delve a little deep into the Boston Cannons and their turnaround for your weekly column on InsideLacrosse.com this week. And I thought you did a nice job just kind of expanding on some of the flaws, some of the things that could potentially turn around. And one thing, you know, I haven't gotten a chance to see the Cannons play very much recently as they've been playing a little bit better. And one thing that struck out to me that I wanted to address with you, get your thoughts on real quick here, is you made mention of how the defense is playing a lot better, and one thing that I've noticed over the last season and a half has been, you know, Mitch Belisle from Defender of the Year form in 2011 to now very rarely being mentioned as even an All-Star level player. I wonder how much of his, you know, kind of diminishing impact is due to some of the sets and schemes that Boston was employing on the defensive end, some of the things that they were asking everybody to do. And now have you started to see him play better as they've been a little bit more cohesive as a unit?
I mean, it would be hard for him to, you know, this is harsh, but it'd be hard for him to play worse than he did in the first couple games. I think he came back from NLL carrying injuries. That's my theory. I don't know that, but just watching him play the last couple years in the MLL and then this this first stretch of games early in the season, it didn't seem like he was even close to the same player to me. Foot speed wise, checks, just, you know, he's a grit and dirt player. You know, he's a guy that's going to try and, if you beat him, he's going to try and mess you up, you know, and I didn't see him in a lot of goal replays is what I said in the column. It's just like, you haven't seen those guys, him or Sweeney, in goal replays. And I think Sweeney was probably Boston's best defender, early on, even though they didn't have that many defensive impact guys. I think he probably played the best out of anybody in the back, including Jordan Burke. And even still, if I would say, like, he's not in the replay, which means he's not in the play. Or he comes in like late, you know, for that late hit, the Rodney Harrison shot, if you will, the guy that jumps on the tackle at the end of the play in football. You don't even see that from him. And he was always good for that. And if you're out of the play, you're out of the play. And I don't know. I just, you got to see defensemen play defense. And I didn't see a lot of that. That doesn't mean teams didn't go at him. They certainly did. He always has trouble with bigger guys. He always has. John Grant Jr. eats him up every time he plays against him. Maybe not every time, but most of the time. Bigger guys body him up and push him, you know, towards the crease. And they get that rollback for either a shot or a quick dump to X. And that's kind of, if he has a weakness, that's his weakness. But he's usually great on ball, great with his checks, not the greatest in transition with the ball. But, you know, everything else that you could ask for a defenseman, he's usually good at. And I think he's gotten better for sure now, you know, that you mention it. And in the games that I've seen, which is all of them, he has progressively gotten better. So I really think he was carrying an injury from NLL. So I don't want to like say it's a career decline yet. That's not where I'm going with that. I just think that he was just kind of carrying some injuries and maybe they're healing up, and hopefully this week, he'll take another week off and get back into it.
And are there any other first half storylines that are, appropriate to revisit right now?
I mean, obviously Denver. I mean, oh, you mean just with Boston?
No, generally speaking.
Generally speaking, obviously Denver. I think Hamilton losing those two games in a row and then coming back, winning a couple games, that's, you know, somewhat surprising to some people. Chesapeake being in third, I don't think people would have predicted that. I mean, they're four games out from Denver, but everybody's, you know, a long way off from Denver as far as regular season form goes. And I think it's funny how you listen to commentators and guys that call the game and they're like, you know, Denver's 10-0, but hey, they've always choked in the playoffs, and they say it over and over and over and over and over. And you're just like, okay, we get it. Like, we know they've made it every year in their existence and they haven't won it. They're the 2011 Cannons before the Cannons won. So they're the feel good story going through, but also kind of got this little dark cloud hanging over, you know, the back of Stagnita's head. And that's why Stag is never satisfied. To be honest, he's still bare on all these coaches calls. He's just like, we didn't play well. We didn't play well. It's like, dude, you won by 12. I think you played all right, you know, but he's never satisfied. I don't think he's gonna be satisfied until he wins by 30 and shuts out the other team. So when you have that hunger and that determination, I think Denver, you know, past aside, this is a new regime. You know, you can't lump past teams in. This is a whole new ball game. It's a whole new collection of players for the most part, except for Mundorf and Zink and even Schwartzman to a certain degree. You just can't do that. And I think last year's acquisition of Kelly at the trade deadline really, really helped this team and set the tone. And they have a great mix of veterans and young talent that can score goals and really just share the ball so well, play prototypical best lacrosse you can play. You know, share the ball, get your shots. No one's selfish on the team. That's scary. That's dangerous, regardless of regular season or postseason.
And then to wrap up, kind of a first half look back, I'm going to run through, you know, just a handful of guys that are in the top 20 in scorers in the league right now. And I want you to tell me which one of these guys, being where they're at, surprises you the most.
Sure.
Denver midfielder Drew Snyder, Chesapeake midfielder Matt McCreadys, Boston midfielder Mike Stone, Denver midfielder/attackman Zach Greer.
That's tough. I feel like the easy answer is Drew Snyder, but the more complicated and surprising answer is probably Greer. Greer not playing attack, plays midfield, is a midfielder, comes on in the O set, rarely gets caught on D. I haven't really seen him get caught on D. That's kind of due to Denver's superior, you know, riding game and giving time for him to come off. Him putting up points and making short sticks look silly, trying to defend him and body him up, is really, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise, but it is because he has been out of the league for so long. And obviously Snyder being fifth in the league in scoring, no one would have ever predicted that. I don't even think Drew Snyder would have predicted that, you know, but it is what it is. He's put up big points, scores big goals, and, you know, has at times put the team on his shoulders. The only guy ahead of him on his team is Brendan Mundorf, who is one of the greatest, if not the greatest attackman. Actually, Bocklet's ahead of him too, but Bocklet also is surprising for his goal total and also his assist total. He's got 9 assists. He's got 33 goals and 9 assists, 42 points. That's a lot, you know? As for the other guys, I love McCreese. I think McCreese is awesome. I don't know why he's listed as an attackman, and he rarely plays attack, only if kind of Junior is taking a break. But he's great to watch. I'm a big McCreese fan. Even when, you know, commentators pronounce his name as Mac Rides, I like to call him Mac Rides sometimes, kind of hyphenate it.
It is a cool name. Mac Rides would be a cool name if that were his name.
Mac Rides. I like to hyphenate that. I think that would be much cooler. But 25 points from a guy that a lot of people probably thought was a throwaway. I mean, I know Connell loves him, and his teammates love him. He's young. He brings a certain enthusiasm to that team. He's if I may go into the Wayback Machine, he's the Sam Cassell to the Rockets championship teams. What's up?
That's an interesting one. I mean, I loved those Rocket teams. I also love Sam Cassell because the criminal in me was a big Florida State fan at the time. And he had a little bit more hype coming in, but I also think that there was some aspect of young guy who was ultimately career-wise going to exceed his ceiling, which I think, you know, now we're starting to maybe expect that from McCreedy's based on what he's shown so far. So I think that's a pretty good comp. I can get with that. But that puts you in a position where you need to explain who's the Vernon Maxwell of this Chesapeake Bayhawk offense.
Oh, man. Is it the way Kyle Dixon's been going off on people and getting penalties, it might be Kyle Dixon. he gets nasty now. He gets into it. Haven't seen kind of that mean streak from him before. He's definitely, he'll give it as good as he gets it, in transition, chasing the ball. He's got some slashes. He's got some cross checks to the face. I remember in the Boston game, that they lost, that was a big play. So I'm going to go with Kyle Dixon in the best way possible. Long bomber that's got a temper. I like it, you know. Also with McCreedy's and Cassell comparison, you know, apologies to McCreedy's. You do not look like an alien. Sam Cassell's kind of got that alien thing going on. So
that's true.
Know, Matt McCreedy looks like a normal dude. So I just wanted to clarify.
But everybody loves Sam Cassell. So it's a good, you know, it's a good starting point.
Yeah. I'm a Celtics fan. Come on. How can I not love him?
Well, Kyle Davitt, you need to get out of the dorm room that you're currently occupying at the end of the camp week. And I need to get back to writing about new programs and why they're adding Division I men's lacrosse.
Awesome. Shout out to Blue Chip 225. Been here for 2 weeks. Sorry, couldn't complete the triathlon, as the coaches call it here, for rising sophomores, but it's been a great time. They've treated me really well. Shout out to Ted Spencer for putting me up and, you know, letting me coach him up. Had a great time and can't wait to come back next year.
And you had a good – how about a shout out to the late night weight room at Bryant?
Oh, yeah. That was I don't think I was supposed to be there, but I was there. I've never seen anything like it. I'm not a D1 athlete. So when I see that, I'm like, I kind of teared up a little. I've never seen nice weights before. We just kind of lift cinder blocks in the Shire and throw goats and stuff. So, you know.
Awesome. An all-star worthy way to end the podcast, Kyle.
Indeed. Happy all-star game weekend, everyone.
We'll catch you next week, guys. Inside the Cross Podcast.